It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's straightforward. He has no experience of English football. He's come from Japan.
He's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
So I'm not one of the bottle. I think I'm a special one.
Hello and welcome to the Phoenix 5 show. I'm your host, Dave Holland. And this week I'm joined by my ever-present co-host, Mr. Paul Mickey McGrath. How you doing, mate?
Good, mate. Not too bad. Just finished watching the World Cup, the Women's World Cup final. Bit disappointed for England, obviously. Got all so close, but still so far. It's a familiar story, shall we say.
It absolutely is. This week, we're going to discuss Pep Guardiola. But not his playing career, not his time at Manchester City, not even his time at Bayern Munich. His amazing managerial spell at Barcelona. But before we do, let's get into this week's news. The Lioness is very disappointing, gutted for them. They've done so well, and as a nation, we should be proud of them. It just seemed like a step too far. It sounded like Spain were on it, weren't they? From the first whistle, they were on it. They had energy, and then the manager changes things at halftime, and it did make a difference. But that's the name of the game. But a little bit disappointing there for the Lionesses, mate.
Yeah, technically, probably just slightly above our players, unfortunately. I mean, I watched bit in patches because I've got the kids and stuff and just do other bits. But from what I saw, it was, I think, technically just a little bit ahead. But also, you do need a little bit of luck in these kind of games, as you know, in finals. And I think they edged with Spain just on the luck side. Even though they got the penalty, then you think, well, England have got rode their luck a little bit with the penalty, then the penalty miss. But I don't think Spain really looked that threatened by us towards the end. But, you know, it's progress. Where women's football was, you know, 4 years ago to now has been a massive change. I think it's positive for young ladies watching the game. I don't watch a lot of women's football because I don't barely have time. But I think that was a good representation of what's to come.
Swiftly on, after disappointment, we can talk about Saturday's fixtures. I'll let you go ahead. It was your team against the mighty Spurs. I had it as a draw on my bet. So Man United stuffed me on that. I thought we had a draw written all over it. It's not good, is it? I've got to say to you that they just Man United just they seem like they're lacking all over the pitch. We mentioned about Mason Mount. I've never rated him anyway. I've been on the fence with him. He hasn't come and set the world alight. He's, I don't know what he's doing in there. He's just a body at the minute. He's just a hard. You look at Man United from last season, and then you look at them this season, and it, for me, they're going backwards. I don't know what you feel about yourself.
Hit the nail on the head. I try not to go into too much of a rant because I've already vented yesterday and this morning to the WhatsApp group of Man United fans I'm with. I think I'll sum it up very quickly. I think is the best thing to do. Ten Hag came in with a difficult job at the beginning of the last season. He had big personalities that he had to kind of manage and wield out. I think he did an excellent job last season. He overachieved in patches. My criticism of him at that point is his in-game management I still thought was quite poor, and he wasn't affecting games quick enough. He had a bit of a purple patch where we went on like a 17-game unbeaten run, and then it kind of masked over. But the last 10 games of the season, the squad was tired. This season, we knew what we needed. We needed a right-back, a goalkeeper, an emerging centre-back, a defensive midfielder and a striker. And the club was supposed to be sold by now. It hasn't been. So restrictions on FFP and buying players has been up now linked to who we can sell, which a club of Man United size should never be the case. I know spending money has always been banded around with Man United, which I get, but the team needed £300 million and that was to stay present. That wasn't even to move forward. If you look at what's going on around us, of Arsenal's investment this season, Chelsea's investment, Liverpool will invest a little bit more at the end of the season, Man City being Man City. And the biggest problem is now, and as I said, we've had two games, and how do you beat Man United? Every manager in the Premier League will turn around and go run through the middle because the access of Bruno, Mount and Casemiro isn't going to dominate games, unfortunately. Mason Mount, I think, is one of the worst signings the club's ever made. Add to the fact you give him a number seven, which gives him untold pressure. And now it's at the stage where, what, as I said to the group, what's going to happen is we're going to lose to Arsenal probably next week. That's two losses in a row. And we should have lost to Wolves. Let's be realistic. Maybe draw a game further down the line. And then the Glazers might go, shit, we've got to panic and spend £200 million again, like they did last season, bringing in Casemiro and players at the back end of the season. The good players are gone. You know, this is a great window to strengthen. You know, Casado was around, the Southampton midfielder, Declan Rice, Felix from Atletico Madrid. And there was players that you could have got this season and would have strengthened Man United. And instead, we've gone for an unproven forward. So I can't judge him yet. He might be fantastic, but unproven forward. A midfielder that was awful last season, Frank Lampard, highly rated. And I don't really judge his ability as a coach to agree with that. Again, Mason Mount is someone he wanted when he was coaching Ajax, I think it was, or maybe someone else before. He was a big fan of him. So really what they should have done is brought in Kane, brought in Hoyland. That's £150 million on two players. Brought in Casado from Brighton and brought in Mason Mount as a squad player, but we haven't. So it's early to say, and I just think if the takeover does or doesn't happen by the end of the season, unless Man United have a playing style that we're losing with, and I mean a play, you know, a style with a possession base or counter-attacking base, I think you've got to start looking at the Brighton manager by the end of the season, because if it's not this season, then next season, either Pep will decide to resign and he'll go to Man City, or Klopp will walk away and Liverpool will go for him. And I think the club's poisoned. We know that. You know, the Glazers need to get out of the club. It's affecting everything from top to bottom. We're just not good enough. It's disappointing. I'm just done with it. I'm just so deflated by the manner of defeat, because it's predictable. You can see how to beat Man United from a mile away. And as a manager, which he is, for him not to see that is a worry. Like, that's a big worry. But that's my point. We were shot. Shit. I'll stop it there. The rest of the Premier League had a good weekend. Brighton, fantastic again. What a win they've had. Liverpool came back from the jaws of defeat. Newcastle, Man City. I watched that game yesterday. It was a joy to watch. Watching good football was just a pleasure. But I've ranted for long enough. Dave, your thoughts on the weekend?
Do you want to now, while the transfer window is still open, change your top four?
No.
In the Premier League? You're still sticking with it, yeah?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. Fantastic. Yeah, no, agreed. Brighton are amazing. They just get stripped every single season of their best players. And then I'll tell you what they need. I know you want to talk about taking their managers, but people want to start thinking about taking their scouts.
Yeah.
Because the players that they seem to just bring out of nowhere are just class. And they've got a business model that's working fantastically. I mean, the amount of money they've made from transfers alone in the last couple of seasons is astronomical.
I think it's about 400 million they've made in profit. I mean, 270 million from Chelsea alone.
Yeah. But let's move swiftly on then. Chelsea. So from this week's news, they're spending. What is going? They're like we said, they're playing Championship Manager. They're playing Football Manager. Going on their scouting, it's just whoever's in the paper that day. There's no thought going into it, because if someone likes it, the same with the Ukrainian guy they've got, Mudrić, yeah. Arsenal all over him, and then Chelsea took him. Same with what they've just done with Lavia and Caicedo.
Yeah.
Like, I thought the Chelsea were doing well this summer in getting rid of this huge squad. And I thought they're going to trim it down. Pochettino's going to have something to work with. So they did that. And then all of a sudden, they're just buying players willy-nilly again. And they're just going to have a squad that's humongous again. And I don't think it's the right way that Pochettino should be going. Although in their first game against Liverpool, I thought they played well. But I don't see the Caicedo and Lavia, the need to sign both of them. I really don't.
Agree. I do agree. I mean, look, we touch on Brighton very quickly again. Tony Bloom's done a fantastic job, and their structure and setup from top to bottom is world-class. Like, it's a world-class structure from top to bottom for their level. And I said about bringing the manager, and I said, and to the group I was speaking to, I also said, and some of their scouting network or their chief executive, they've got a structure that works for them, scouting players, because what they've done, and I never was a big fan of director of football and things like that, but football's moved on. You've got to move on. United haven't, and Brighton have done it fantastically. Graham Potter had a very successful style of football. De Zerbe came in and took that style and made it slightly different, but in a very successful way and very fluid way. And it's very simple. Round pegs in round holes. And that's what they do. And it doesn't matter if he moves on, another manager comes in. The system and the style of play is identifiable, and you can interchange players quite quickly in that. And that's with a lot of clubs don't have that right. And I think now, going on to Chelsea, they brought all these players in, and I was surprised. I didn't think they'd do as much business. And you're right. It's almost like they're working off the scouts of other scouts and going, well, Liverpool want him and Klopp wants him and he must be good. We'll get him in. Whether that's enough or works, I don't know. But I've still tipped them to be number one at the end of the season. I think we just touched on quickly on Jude Bellingham as well. Another two goals, another game, two goals down. Stand ovation from the fans. Fucking hell, man. He just, what a baller. It's so great to see, you know, a young player abroad just representing like he has.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, everyone laughed when Bellingham retired his shirt. Doesn't seem like a silly thing to now, does it? I mean, he is. I saw the goals, and he's just absolutely class. And I say, well, is he still 19? Isn't he 19?
Yeah.
I mean, the sky's the limit for this kid. And yeah, he's doing, again, you stated there, our three best English players are all abroad at the minute, or two of them at least are abroad. Yeah. You don't really see that from English players. They're very reluctant to go abroad, but it seems like, you know, it's happening now. We had it in the 90s, obviously, with your David Platts, Gascoigne, Paul Ince, yeah, them sort of guys. But it's good to see them plying their trades at the biggest clubs in the world, and it can only be good for England international football. Yeah, play a trade elsewhere, different style of football.
Dream make a planet Neptune and Venus.
This week on Mystic Mickey, it's a new segment of the show. As you know, Mickey, aka Paul McGrath, is shocking with his predictions. So each week, I'm going to put something to him and let my make him predict it. So this week, off the back of Man United's drubbing yesterday to, let's say, Spurs, they're not fantastic. I mean, you expect to win that. So this week's question to Mickey McGrath is, who do you think will be the first manager sacked this season in the Premier League?
Good question. Okay, that's a toughie. Ooh.
You can say Ten Hag if you want.
I mean, no, I don't think they'll sack him. I think I predicted Wolves to be relegated and they're bottom of the league. I predicted Villa to finish fifth and they're second bottom of the league. So a 50-50 on that one. I have a sneaky suspicion. I think Moyes will be the first to be gone.
Okay.
I think he needs a few more players. I don't know if they're going to back him anymore. Fans are so quick on with Moisey, especially on social media. They're so quick, like one game, Moyes ball, they call it. And they don't like him, the fan. I don't understand the West Ham fans. He's won your first European trophy since whatever the last time they won a trophy was. Call it Mickey Mouse or whatever. It's still a trophy at the end of the day, and he still won it. And they want him out. If he loses three or four games on the bounce, they'll be calling for his head, and I think he'll be the first to go. So I'm going to stick my neck on the line and say David Moyes. Not that I want it to happen, but I think Moyesy.
Okay, well, I'll put that to the Twitter, the Twitter boys over after the show, and see if they agree or disagree with you. It's opinion based, so you know there's no right or wrong answer. It's your opinion. Pep Guardiola's Barcelona.
What I learned here, okay, everything starts with the ball and finish with the ball. So sometimes we forget that this is a game 11-11 with one ball. And we try to keep this ball, we try to play with the ball, we try to make everything with the ball. And that is what we learn when you start as a boy here. I think in the future, I don't know what's going on in my career. I don't know if we will stay more a lot of years here or I'm going to the... to retire in the some island to paradise to enjoy my last year, or I'm going to play in another country, I don't know, but I'm sure as a coach, I will attack.
You're quoted as saying this is not the greatest Barcelona side of all time. What would they have to do to convince you that they are?
Because it's so difficult. Because right now, okay, you have some image about this team, about how they play, but now it's fresh, now it's clear, but we don't remember Milan Sacchi or remember the Liverpool, the best, the 17th, or Manchester, or Madrid, the Stefano, the 50s, 60s, or the Cruyff in the Ajax Amsterdam. So it would be presumptuous.
So Barcelona
presumptuous is
was overseen by Pep Guardiola between 2008 and 2012, and it was their best period under any manager. The Catalan coach holds the record for the most trophies won, with 14 in 4 years at Barcelona. During his time in charge, Barca claimed 2 Champions League titles, 3 La Ligas, 2 Copa del Reyes, 3 Spanish Super Cups, 2 European Super Cups, and 2 World Club Championships. In 2008-2009, the team claimed an unprecedented treble of La Liga, Champions League, and Copa del Rey. In Pep Guardiola's first season, it was 2007-2008 season, ended trophyless for Barcelona. The club said goodbye to Frank Rijkaard and turned to former Barca player Pep Guardiola, who was coach of the B team and had just taken them to the second division B. Pep Guardiola's kicked off the season with a new-look squad and quickly assured themselves of a place in the Champions League group stage with a 4-1 win over Polish side Wisla Krakow. As within a month of the season remaining, Barca were in a shout of winning the unprecedented treble. The Copa del Rey was the first trophy to fall in Barca's hands that season after a semi-final victory over Mallorca. The club then faced Atletico Bilbao in the final and they went 1-0 down. But then strikes from Torre, Messi, Kurcevic and Xavi ensured that they had a 4-1 win and the first piece of silverware under Guardiola. Just 2 days later, trophy number 2 arrived. The famous 6-2 win in the Bernabeu against Real Madrid placed Barca in pole position for La Liga title. And when their closest rivals lost 1-0 at home to Villarreal, a 19th league championship was theirs. A third trophy came that season, and it was the Champions League. After a memorable semi-final against Chelsea and that famous Iniesta goal at Stamford Bridge, Barca defeated reigning champions and supportive of a friend of the show and my co-host, Mickey McGrath. They beat the reigning, but Barca defeated reigning champions Manchester United in the final 2-0, thanks to goals from Samuel Eto'o and Leo Messi.
Pep walked into a very successful team that he left behind by Frank Rijkaard. I think if you look at the players that he had there at the time coming into, like the core was there, Valdez, Puyol, Yaya Toure, Iniesta, Messi. Those are the 5-6 players that you're thinking that you've formed the base for this squad. And then he went to Bayern Munich. And again, he won off the back of Bayern Munich winning the treble. He comes in and he does well there. Doesn't win the Champions League. Was it a successful period? Some fans in Germany did not think so. Goes to Man City first season. I was like, he's in a flop. And he did the first season, arguably. And I've always said that even going to Man City, he's gone from one club to another club from based on success. And I appreciate his style of football is you know, to a certain type of person's style. And he has revolutionised football to a point. win the treble last season, that changed all for me, because he's built a team and he's now rebuilding a team and it's relentless. And he's shown through, you know, I think the reason why I didn't dislike him so much, because he was being lauded again with the, in the breakfast set, Sir Alex Ferguson. And that was hard because, like, you know, Alex had done it at Aberdeen, which was like back in the day, was it a miracle? It was like Leicester winning the league almost. It was that significant. But then going to win a European Cup with Aberdeen as well was massive. But that Barcelona team, bloody Nora, man. They were something else. I've got to admit, I watched some highlights doing the research for this, and they were just unbelievable. On to the Champions League game, or the Champions League final. I remember, and we were banging form for that, and I thought we've got every chance to win this. And we were actually favourites going into it, okay? Their team was Victor Valdes, Puel, Torre and Pique and Silvino at the back. And I thought they could be got at, because Yaya Touré was not a centre-back, but he was put back there under Pep. Xavi, Busquets and Iniesta in midfield obviously was unbelievable, but they weren't at their peak at this period. So again, you thought you can get it. Messi wasn't the superstar. He was still a superstar at this stage. Of course he was. But he wasn't the player I think we all went on to see in the next 5 or 6 years. And then we had, you know, Van der Sar, Rio Ferdinand, Vidic, Evra, Carrick, Ryan Giggs, Ronaldo, Rooney. Even our bench with Dimitar, Berbatov, Paul Scholes, Nani, Rafael, Carlos Tevez. You know, their bench was Pedro, Bojan, Idagard Johnson, and one or two other players. Just unbelievable. But it was in the stars for them. They picked up the goal quite early on and it was game over. And the best team, unfortunately, won at the end of the day. So, yeah, a phenomenal team in that period. 14 trophies in 4 seasons. You know, Frank Rijkaard left Barcelona. Guardiola was promoted from Barcelona B and had to help redevelop the entire concept of the team, because one of the arguments was that the Barcelona star was missing towards the end. And it was that summer that Ronaldinho left Barcelona to join AC Milan. And it was rumoured that Eto'o would also go for a new club, but he went on to stay for another year. What I found interesting was Barca used a 4-3-3 under Rijkaard, with Ronaldinho being most influential player on the pitch. But obviously Guardiola saw in Messi that you can't have both of them, because they are not similar, but it was too much attacking flair almost. Guardiola implemented a more disciplined side that focused on possession, opposed to having individuals and keeping the ball for as long as possible, which went on to work from then on to now. And you can see they just tire teams down chasing after the ball.
And what was the name of it, Paul? What was the name of this style of football?
Tiki-taka.
That's it.
The style of tiki-taka that Barcelona possessed under Guardiola is arguably the most effective new style of football in the 21st century. It revolutionised football. I am not a massive fan of it, if I'm honest. I think what happened is the negative effect is everyone wanting to then try and play tiki-taka football. And I just find it quite boring. Even the Premier League, and I've stated this in previous episodes, the Premier League isn't the competitive... what's the one I'm looking for? Styles. The styles in the Premier League have gone less and less. We still have Brighton, how good Brighton are at the moment. Again, not tiki-taka as much, but that kind of style possession base and boring the team to death with like 1,500 passes per game. I just don't find that as entertaining. And I think that's the problem that I have with tiki-taka, is that it became almost boring to watch because it was so effective and so simple. And even through the odds were against them going into the match, as I said, with, you know, Barcelona against Man United, they completely dominated us. You know, Eto'o and Lionel Messi, we got dominated. It wasn't like an unlucky game. We got battered. And Fergie didn't know how to answer it. And obviously completing the Barca treble at the time was a kick in the teeth, because again, we could have stopped them winning the treble. It's the same with the Man City game, winning their treble. We could have stopped them winning the treble. But at the end of the day, you can't stop one of the greatest footballing sides in the football history. They are that damn good.
Well, they only got better. And following the record-breaking first season in charge, Pep Guardiola's team hit new heights in 2009, becoming the first team to win 6 trophies in a calendar year. So they're just smashing it. First up in August was the Spanish Super Cup and a victory over Atletico Bilbao. Goals from Xavi and Pedro helped them to win 2-1 in the first leg, and then Messi and Bojan completing a 3-0 win in the second leg. In Monaco, It was the UEFA Super Cup. A late goal from Pedro Silva win over Shakhtar Donetsk at the fifth trophy. And then the year was rounded off with the FIFA Club World Cup. A semi-final win over Mexico side Atalanta was followed by another extra time victory thanks to Messi to seeing off Argentinian club Estudiantes. Now, pardon my, I'm very Cockney, so for me to try and pronounce things will go a little bit off. But later in the 2009-10 season, Guardiola's team added a second consecutive league title to their collection, amassing a record 99 points to pip second place and pipped second place Real Madrid by just 3 points. So that was a two-horse race, if anything. Victory eluded the team in the Copa del Rey, where they were knocked out by Seville in the last 16, and the Champions League, where they fell to eventual winners. And the team we spoke about last week's manager, Jose Mourinho's Inter Milan in the semi-final.
Inter Milan will go to Madrid, and Jose Mourinho's moment has come again. A special success for the special one. Victory over the reigning champions, whose anthem rings defiantly around the Nou Camp.
Clive, it's all kicking off. Mourinho's run to the crowd and he's waving, and Valdes manhandled them, and now everybody's been drawn to it.
So, yeah, it was still pretty successful season in his second season. I mean, a lot of them Super Cups are off the back of what you win the season before. So they're pretty like the Community Shield. They're there to be played at the start of the season, so you can rack up a few numbers with early trophies, don't you? So, yeah, his second season was pretty good as well. He's won the league with 99 points, and he's got to the semi-final of the Champions League. So, that's a pretty successful season.
Yeah, as I said, you can't argue 14 trophies over 4 years is unparalleled. I think the interesting point that I found about Pep's Barcelona is when Jose left Inter Milan to go to Real Madrid and they had their little spats. Because even though in the British media it wasn't followed as much, those two was blockbuster, because Jose knew how to wind people up. And I think one of the reasons almost that Pep left at the end, he stated he was mentally exhausted from the pressure of being the Barcelona manager. Because obviously once he left Barcelona, he was there for 4 years, Bayern Munich for I think three, and then everyone thought Man City would be the same kind of cycle, 3 or 4 years, and then he'll kind of move on, which I think we're all hoping for. You know, we wanted him to move on so we could have a break from the Pep dominance of the Premier League. But when Jose came in, Jose was digging him all the time and poking in and trying to provoke him. And they had some great feuds. And Jose was the only person to be able to stop a Pep Barcelona team in La Liga at the time. Yeah, with Ronaldo having one of his best seasons in world football. I think I really struggle with this because, as I said, I'm not a massive fan of Pep Guardiola. I can understand why everyone is. I get it. Like, I just find it, if you give someone everything they need constantly as a manager, they should be winning trophies in and out. And Barcelona was a massive, massive pool. You know, he had Zlatan Abramovich. If you take Messi out of that team, my argument always was, would he have won as much as he did with Messi out of the team? And I don't think he would have done. And I know not one team squad, I get that, but I just don't think they would have done. I think he had all the right pieces then. It's a bit like Arsenal, a bit like Man City when he went in there. As I said, he had the structure there already ready for him. They spent 3 years bringing over Barcelona's structure to Man City because they had a 3-year plan to get Pep in charge of the club. And then when he got there, you know, there was players there which had already run the league. It wasn't a new system or anything new. So, but again, he's proven again how good he is by now being able to spend shitloads of money and get the players in that he wants and develop that squad. So the Barcelona team was unreal. I mean, let's be fair. They dominated Man United massively in the final, as I said. They were smashing teams all over La Liga. The Inter Milan game, I remember that really well because it was obviously Jose versus Pep. And it was, I think the anti-football game was used, was often banded around with Jose. Anti-football because he went with a game plan to stifle them and defend. And Jose's team at that period at Chelsea and in Inter was about getting one chance and defending the lead. And I think it was almost like, and again, anti-football with him. And I didn't understand it because ultimately, if you've got a team that keep the ball the whole time, you've got to work out to beat them. And his way of beating them was to let them have the ball and we'll just put 11 men behind the ball. And the minute we can hit them on the counter, we need one chance, one goal, and we'll beat them. And he did it. So I think people argued almost that he's at Man City. Would he be successful, a class of success, without winning the Champions League? Because at Bayern Munich, he was seen as not really a success because he didn't win the Champions League in that period. At Barcelona, these 4 years, unreal. They've not been, even when the trouble with Man City, I don't think equals what he did in those 4 years at Barcelona, because it was such a revolutionary style of football and dominance. The second season was a massive success. So winning 6 trophies in a season, unbelievable.
Oh, it was amazing. But yeah, six in a calendar year. So he's coming it. I've got some questions to ask about it, about after, as is it coincidences around Spain at the international at the time, but I'll come on to that. But let me just go through the seasons as they played out. So that was the second season, as a successful second season. This is where I feel, but they were at their best. It was the third season, and it's when they secured the Champions League for the second time. Now, you'll remember that final, but I'll read off a preview of it. So, in the first season in charge of the first team, the challenge for Pep Guardiola was clear: reclaim the Champions League title. Barca started the season well, winning the Spanish Super Cup against Seville, overturning a 3-1 deficit in the first leg to win 4-0, a courtesy of a hat-trick of Lionel Messi. After a promising start to their La Liga campaign, the first challenge of the domestic season arrived: a meeting with Real Madrid and new coach Jose Mourinho, the man that had been in charge of Inter that eliminated for Barcelona in the Champions League the previous season. The game was meant to be a real test of both sides, but it wasn't. It was a 5-0 drubbing at the Nou Camp of Real Madrid. It was a 5-0 drubbing. Goals from Xavi, Pedro, David Villa, and Jeffrin. I don't remember Jeffrin, but he's got the 90th minute. He must have been a substitute or something. And it set the tone for Barcelona to lift their third title in a row. So, yeah, so at the Camp Nou, Barcelona humped them 5-0. Even greater glory was to come in the Champions League. Barca overcame Real Madrid once again in the semi-finals. The 3-1 aggregate earned them a place in the final at Wembley Stadium against none other than old foes and team they slapped about 2 years before, Manchester United.
A fitting setting and a rivalry renewed. It's Manchester United against Barcelona again in the UEFA Champions League final. Well, 2 years ago, it was Barca's night in Rome. Can Manchester United get the better of the Spanish side tonight? Xavi. Prompting and probing. And finding Pedro. And Barca leads! Fantastic finish to a flowing move. And Manchester United find themselves behind. How well did Pedro finish this? Rooney. Giggs. Back to Rooney. 1-1. And United's main man does it again. What a brilliant strike this is from Rooney. Past Valdes. Into the feet of Messi. Still Lionel Messi. 2-1 Barcelona, and who else but Lionel Messi? It had everything: pace, power, and accuracy. Messi, mesmeric again.
That day, Pep Guardiola's team produced one of the all-time great performances in football history, beating Sir Alex Ferguson's side 3-1, with Eric Abidal lifting the trophy to complete a comeback after a serious illness. I think we all know he had liver cancer, didn't he? So he was going through something at the time. So I think it was a nice touch from Barcelona to do that.
Yeah.
Left the trophy. Now, you'll remember the final. It was a masterclass, wasn't it? That's where I feel, when we talk about Pep Guardiola's Barcelona, I feel that Champions League final sums it all up.
That was heartbreaking. That was very heartbreaking. I felt... We'd lost Ronaldo recently, obviously. I think the season before we lost Ronaldo. It was coming to a stage, I think, at United where we were still dominating, but we had a really good Champions League run. And I was pretty confident Ferguson would get this right and how to beat Barca on the second time round. And I think we were we started the better team. The first 15, I always said, I remember that game. I remember it so well. And I was with friends and I said, the first 10 minutes of this game are key. We need to score in the first 10 minutes. And we came out of the blocks like a whippet. And it was all Man United for the first 8 to 10 minutes. Rooney had a great chance. It was missed. I think Hernandez had a chance that was missed. And then they got the other end and score in the 27th minute. I mean, or 25th minute, maybe. And then all of a sudden, you just saw United players. They sunk for about 5 minutes. And then Rooney got one back and it was 1-1. And it was like, right, game on. But from the minute Rooney scored until the end of the game was over. Barca were phenomenal. And then Messi scoring with a header to sum it all up, you know, against Rio Ferdinand and Vidic. Like, the guy's never scored a header in his life, but his ball comes in, he's got between, and he's out-jumped Rio Ferdinand, and it's a goal. And I thought, you can't be angry when you lose a game to a team that are the best in the world.
I'll put a poll out later. We spoke about AC Milan's team on paper for their Champions League win against Liverpool in the previous episodes that we've done. What a game that would be between them two sides. If you put them two sides against each other, player for player, that's an amazing game. That's an all-stars game that you would do on FIFA. But for me...
But I don't think... I think that AC Milan team, name for name, is superior to this team, in my opinion.
Possibly you could be correct, but the way that the football had evolved between that sort of... That time, the way Pep evolved football, I feel like that team could have probably... The Barcelona team would have probably outplayed that AC Milan team and played them off the park. That's certain, like... It was just the way that he had changed the way football was played. That team, you got to remember, that team were 3-0 up against Liverpool, and we went through Liverpool's team.
Yeah,
you know, could you imagine what that Barcelona team does to that with the possession, the possession play that they've got? They would just wear that team out. So on paper, it looks an amazing game. I just feel that the way that football had changed, the way Guardiola changed football to that point, would have probably outplayed them. But the only disappointment that came from that third season for Guardiola, and he would have done the treble again if it wasn't for Cristiano Ronaldo's extra time winner in the final of the Copa del Rey.
Yeah.
So that was the only blemish on that. So he could nearly have done the treble again. So that ends that season. And then it was his final season, his fourth and final season as Barca coach. They lost the Champions League semi-finals to Chelsea, and then he announced that he'd be leaving at the end of the season. You had it right there. He was exhausted, wasn't he? I think he took a little bit of time out before going to Bayern Munich. He was it wasn't straight away, was it?
I think it took a season. He moved back. Well, he went back to LA, I think it was, for a year, and then went to Bayern Munich. And then I think everyone thought again. I think it would be again with the City thing. I think I was hoping this for 3 or 4 years and he would move on, but he hasn't. And as I said, the Pep Barcelona team, let's get it right. All right. It is. You talk about City's treble winning team and what they've done. It's a hard debate of what team is better. Would you say that Pep Barcelona was an attacking flair team? Like, it was like,
no.
It was. Did you find it enjoyable to watch Barcelona? Like, from a pure.
I could see why you would get bored because they were relentless with it. So it wasn't like they played it and then they changed it up and then they went all out attack like United did with the wingers. They stuck at it, but I think that was the aim of the game was to frustrate the other team and wear them down. So it was, but yeah, I can understand how you could get bored. I mean, it's amazing to watch the first time, like anything, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's like you say, we spoke about this before. I wasn't a fan of Mourinho's way of football, but that was the only way to nullify what they were doing.
Yeah,
was to sort of play them at their own game, and he did that very well. Going into Real Madrid and trying to get Real Madrid to play that way is difficult because they were a very flair side, you know.
People have said this about, and I said the same at Chelsea. Everyone goes about their style of play at Chelsea. Then we come off Pep slightly, but it was the same there. It was like, oh, it's boring, but it wasn't. It was a skillful tactical like play he played. And at Real Madrid, Ronaldo had his best season, goal scoring season, and Real Madrid had their most, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I might be wrong, I think that was the highest amount of goals scored in a La Liga season under Jose's winning season. And I think they got the most, I think over 100 points. So they weren't this like, oh, sit back and defend. They were like free flowing. But because he had Ronaldo, and it's a bit like Pep had Messi. So it kind of, and what would have been interesting, and I, not that obviously there are comments want to meet amazing Messi, want to do fantastic things. So it sounds a bit silly, but to have had Messi in a really attacking, fluid team, like I think the goals he scored at Barcelona in a very controlled system, which all worked around him. If you let him go in a free flowing system, it was unbelievable. I mean, the way Messi plays football, and I when you watch him, and I've always been Ronaldo over Messi until recently, I think with the World Cup, it changes as we've debated before on here. But what I do find fascinating with Messi is that I've never seen a player walk around so much in a game and yet be so effective, because he would just walk around for about first 8 or 9 minutes of a game. And I remember at the Man United game, he did exactly the same thing. He did nothing for the first 9-10 minutes. He literally stood, and he didn't even walk around, he just stood around and looked around like the game was passing him by. He's got this, he's like that, what's that film with, what's his name? The mathematician with Russell Crowe. What was it called?
Oh, The Perfect Mind or something.
Yeah, The Perfect Mind. He's like The Perfect Mind. It's like this autistic brain that just observes, then goes, right, I can see the next hour how it's going to play. I'm going to make this run here. I'm going to take him down. He's going to drop his leg. And he just reads the game. And that is just incredible. And I think Pep just so lucky to have that manager, have that player with him in that period. But I have to concede, would you say Pep's the greatest manager of all time now? After he's accomplished,
I think you've got to now.
I agree.
You have. He has been, you know, everyone just turn around and go, oh, well, he has done it with Barcelona, Man City and Bayern, the biggest clubs in the leagues at that time. But it's not as easy as to say that. Yes, he has had money to spend, but you can see their identity. You can see the way they play. That's not nothing to do with how much you spend. They play a certain way. They, you know, they do certain things that only he can drum into them. So, yes, he does have the luxury of being able to spend what he wants when he wants. But his signings are very rarely flops either. I'm gonna go through some of his signings. I wouldn't call them flops, but I'm gonna go through his signings that he made at Barcelona in his time there. So there were 17 of them. And I'll rattle through him in a minute. But I think you've got to now. And he's amazing. He's amazing. And the thing is, he's not playing this, and he's evolved as well. So, you know, like they're just playing out from the back stuff. That wasn't there then.
Yeah,
that's something that he's done now that everyone does. So he's changed the way football's played on more than one occasion. And everyone follows suit. So he's got to go down as the greatest. And he's not finished yet. I don't know his exact age, but he's still got plenty of time in the game left, unless he decides just to call it a day because he's had enough.
Wish he would. It'd be nice if he just ended the season when I'm done. I'm going to go move to LA and like start a movie career or something like that. That'd be lovely.
There's always someone else though, isn't there?
But I think that's what we need now though. Almost, I think it's got to the state. I mean, we had, you know, in England, I can talk for a bit more than I can other countries, but Bob Paisley obviously had that kind of period with Liverpool. Ferguson had it at United. Pep Guardiola's now had it for this period of time. And obviously, Pep's been around since, I don't know, it's been 20 years now, isn't it? More or less. 2006. It's getting on for 20 years, I would say, of being at the top of his game. So who would be next is going to be the next key question. And it's hard because football's changed so much now in the last 20 years. It is hard to get that long-lasting manager that can go from one. I mean, Tuchel's probably the nearest one at the moment who has bounced around a bit, but you're there for such a small amount of time and you almost go from 8 or 9 clubs quite quick. I mean, Tuchel's been now at 6 clubs, I think, 7 clubs. Whereas Pep, as you said, was like Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Man City. You know, Jurgen Klopp was, I think, Borussia Dortmund, Liverpool. And that's the thing now. It's getting harder and harder to have a top manager that's at 3 clubs or 4 clubs for long, long periods.
So let's move on to the signings that he made. So he made 17 signings in his tenure at Barcelona. So I'll rattle them off. You'll know some of the names, but there'll be some of them you don't know. So the first one on is Kerrison. He signed a Brazilian from Palmeiras. Henrique, same from Palmeiras. I don't think he ever went to do anything. His contract was cancelled 4 years later, so he never done anything. So he signed Alexander Hleb from Arsenal. That didn't go down very well either. In his own words, he was happier at Arsenal. That usually is what happens when you make moves that don't work out. he was a spectator for most of the time on the bench for the treble winning season of 2008-2009, and then he was loaned out, shipped out on loan, and then that was made a permanent transfer in 2012. So he was basically a sub the whole time. Ibrahim Afele, he was at PSV. He was a winger for PSV. He joined in Barcelona in 2010. But he said his career was more or less forgettable. But he assisted Messi in one game against Real Madrid. And that's what he's dying off for the rest of his life. Maxwell, he was Zlatan Ibrahimovic's best mate. And he joined with him in 2009. I don't think he really took off. And the next one was Zlatan himself. He wasn't a terrible signing, and he scored 16 goals in 29 appearances for Barcelona, including a 1-0 win over Real Madrid. But he was shipped off after one season, which I found strange. I thought that was a good signing, but I think Eto'o went the other way, wasn't it?
Yeah, him and Pep didn't get on. Zlatan and him didn't see eye to eye. So and that was a big call at the time as well, letting Zlatan go, because there was a lot of, like, they brought him in, Eto'o went the other way, and there was a lot of controversy around that. And he's the only person publicly that you've seen in time that have come out and publicly said he didn't rate him as a coach.
Adriano. Now, when you first saw this, you thought it was Adriano the striker. It wasn't. This was Adriano from Seville. So he was he spent 6 years at the club and made 100 appearances. So it wasn't. And then it goes on to Cesc Fabregas. So this is when they started bringing in these type of players. I don't know why they needed Cesc Fabregas. I think they brought Cesc as a sort of a passer of the torch to Xavi.
Yeah,
Xavi was getting to a certain age. Cesc was going to come in and do the same sort of thing. He played many times for him. That's some midfield, centre midfield there: Iniesta, Fabregas, Xavi, Busquets. That's Spain. That's and we'll get on to Spain next. He went back to his boyhood club, and then he ended up going back to Chelsea in the end. So he left. Then you had Alexis Sanchez. He signed Alexis Sanchez. He was good, but he wasn't as good as when he came to Arsenal. And then he ended up going to United, and that was his life ruined, as you well know. Alexis Sanchez. Seydou Keita, another midfielder, but I think that was more for Busquets, because they sort of played the same. So it's like a defensive midfielder. And then they brought in another defensive midfielder, Javier Mascherano. Then this is a space of 4 years, so he's brought in some players. Javier Mascherano,
but with the players he's brought in so far, the 17 players we're reading off here, two of them were a success. This is my thing that I with Pep, and even at Man City, you said earlier on, you know, he didn't really get many things wrong in terms of signings. Well, I think his eye on the transfer market is pretty poor up until this Man City period.
I was going to say, yeah, Man City, yeah. I don't know who he signed for Bayern, but
Toni Kroos, I think, was signed, a few other players. But again, Bayern Munich wasn't Pep Bayern necessarily, it was the club Bayern. And I think Man City have a very organized system, whereas they identify players as a unit and they pick players out. But Pep's first season, like, he went through three goalkeepers, I think six left backs, nine right backs. It takes him a while to get a good player in. So you're reading off these players here, half of them never heard of. And I would say Mascherano, at what you said, was a success.
David Villa, you must remember David Villa.
Yeah.
He signed for Valencia. He scored 23 goals in his first season for the club. And he was a front three of himself, David Villa, Messi, and Pedro. So I would say he was a success. That was a good signing. And this one definitely was. I think he was still at the club till recently. Dani Alves, right
yeah,
back.
Dani Alves, yeah.
Class. Absolute class.
Yeah.
They signed him from Seville. He arrived for $31 million in 2008. And it goes to say here, he was worth every penny. I have to agree with that. That's a fantastic signing. He was absolutely class, Dani Alves.
So you're naming maybe three out of the 17. Mascherano, Dani Alves, and Cesc Fabregas. You could say we're a success at 17 players. Not a great record, is it?
No, well, I say, you know, he wasn't under pressure there to bring in to unbelievable because he already inherited a squad of just. He was just adding additions to the squad, but they were class anyway. Yeah. And then the last but not least, you'll know this one very well. It was plucked out of you plucked him out of their academy, and then they came back and bought him.
Yeah, PK.
Gerard PK.
Yeah, another time, another place, he would have got in that team. It's just the fact that he couldn't get ahead of Rio and Vidic. You know, because it's such a shame because he was, obviously, he's an amazing player. And he was peaking at Barcelona just as Rio and Vidic were coming off their trial. And he would have been perfect to go in that United back four. But, you know, it is what it is.
I saw I saw an interview with Rio Ferdinand recently where he said Rooney absolutely used to terrorise PK in training.
Yeah.
And he said that they didn't think he was going to make it at that time. He said Rooney used to terrorise him. But I would go on to say that he was successful. So in his 14 seasons at Barcelona, he'd done two trebles, 8 La Liga titles, 7 Copa del Reyes and 3 Champions Leagues.
Average.
Yeah, bang average, I would say. four or five of success. Some of them had to leave to become successful, i.e. Sanchez was unreal at Arsenal. There's no doubts about that. So that's Pep's tenure. I've got a couple of things here that I wanted to ask. So obviously we know that Spain, during that golden era of Spanish football with Pep being at Barcelona, Spain went on to win the Euros in 2008. The World Cup in 2010 and then followed the Euros up with it again in 2012.
Unbelievable.
Do you think that, you said it's not a coincidence, but Spain very much played the same way as Barcelona did at that time? They would do, about 7 or 8 of their players were in that team.
Yeah.
So you don't think it's a coincidence? And does Pep have to take any credit for this successful Spain side at that time?
Oh, 100%. You know, the problem of international, when you look at England, for example, you had a dominance of three clubs in its peak, Man United, Chelsea and Liverpool, and they didn't get on at club level necessarily, rivalry. So it hampered because there was such a high competitive spirit against each other. It's a bit like they were playing week in, week out of Barcelona. So what are you coaching them? It's not, they come in and it's 9 players from Barcelona. So they're just playing as they would play for Barcelona. So there's not much to coach on that point. It's just kind of, go out there and be Barcelona.
Just going on that, in Spain's team at that time from Barcelona, you had Xavi, Iniesta, Puyol, Fabregas, who I think they played as a false nine in that team, didn't they?
Yeah.
Gerard Piqué and Busquets. Now, that is the spine of Barcelona, now in the spine of Spain.
Yeah.
I agree. There's no coincidence that they went on to win that. I can't remember the coach's name of Spain. I would have to check. But he can't believe his luck that he's got that team at that time. And then you had the additions of Fernando Torres, Sergio Ramos, who were all playing at other top clubs in Europe. So at that time, that was their golden era. Proof's in the pudding. But the difference between their golden era and England's and Belgium's is that they produced. We got to the final, which we all know about in the Euros, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, the funny thing with Spain at the time is De Bosque was the manager who was a Real Madrid like through and through. Like he played at Real Madrid, he managed at Real Madrid, he was a caretaker manager at Real Madrid. He was Real Madrid through and through. And 2008 onwards, I think he was there for like 7 years, I think he was, and went on trophy. Oh, 8 years. And it must have been really hard for him to kind of, obviously great because he's winning all the trophies, but he was a Real Madrid head and had to kind of watch the Barcelona team dominate his Spanish period. Obviously, he won everything, so he must have been happy. But interesting time for Spanish football, and it all come from the school of Pep, 100%.
Yeah, we don't very very rarely hear anyone sort of say anything about it during that time. We've mentioned it now, but I've never heard anyone and say, no, Pep had a lot to do with that Spanish.
Oh, no, it was dominance. Yeah, everyone knew. Everyone, it wasn't the hidden secret. As you named, the axis was having 9 players within the squad. Everyone gave credit for it being a Pep heavy, Barcelona heavy win all through the tournament. So I would disagree with that. I think it was credited with Pep a lot of it, which is why people were surprised when he didn't come on to take the job, because obviously he already did the job without even being in charge of Spain, some would have argued at the time.
No, you made a good point there about Pep being the Spain manager. Is that stuff something that he can explore once he's done at Man City? You know, we're talking about, we don't know where he goes next. Spain have had their golden era. They're not great at this moment in time. Could you see that being a challenge for Pep to go in there and maybe try and make them successful again?
Yeah, potentially. It depends what tackles he finds. Could he do it? I always say international football and club football are very different. So it is a completely different set of rules. Implementing the style of football that he wants to implement. I mean, Spain aren't massively miles away from it anyway. Technically very good players. Would he get frustrated? Maybe that could be the issue. Frustration of being able to influence the game as quickly as he wanted to. That would be a test, a real test. But I think that could be his calling, potentially. But it's the same with Jose in Portugal. Everyone was expecting him to take over Portugal as a job. But again, I think he realises international football, he needs to be a player's week in, week out. Dipping in and out is just not for him. You know. And we spoke about Scolari last week with Chelsea. And again, dipping in and out, that was what he was good at. Man to man, week in, week out, that wasn't his forte.
So last but not least, then, since we're on, how do you feel if Gareth Southgate then says he's hanging up his gloves, hanging up his managerial cloak, I'm going to stand down from England, and Pep Guardiola name comes up for England. Now, there's a lot of Man City players that are in the England squad.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be happy with Pep coming in and doing England if Spain wasn't where he wanted to go next? Could you see him being at England? Again, he's managing in England. Everyone's sort of playing the same, trying to play the same sort of football as he is. You know, his sort of way of playing. Do you think that he could go in and do a job for England and just push them? I just mentioned there we got to a final. Could he be the missing link that gets us to final, like actual glory?
Yeah, I don't rate Southgate. I've said it on here before. I'll say it again. Don't rate Southgate as a manager. Talk about camaraderie he's done and all the stuff he's done. He's done a fantastic job of, you know, the proud nation, representing, bringing some pride back as a, you know, the morals of England playing and the wanting to play for England. I think he's done a fantastic job. I mean, he's a fantastic guy. I said the last World Cup, and I was in our group at the time, I think they should have sacked Southgate before the last tournament. And I said they should have gone hell for leather to get someone like Pep in for that 6-week, 8-week period. Because tactically, Southgate is just inept. He's decision-making. He's playing the same players that he shouldn't be playing. Like Harry Maguire, for example, doesn't play week in, week out, and yet he's England's captain. So there's certain things there that I would have changed. If Pep was to come in, I would be all over it. Would he succeed? Don't know. As I said, it's a completely different kettle of fish playing week in, week out to managing, you know, this once every 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, going around scouting games and things like that. It's a completely different kettle of fish. And also, Pep has shown he likes to spend money, you know, and it's a bit like the Jose thing. They need signings. Neither one, I think Pep's shown slightly more, sorry, Jose showed slightly more with like Porto and Inter of how he can do things on a budget, whereas Pep's never really shown that. But has he improved players and can he improve players? 100%. He made Sterling the player he was today. Kyle Walker's fantastic. Foden, how he's managed Foden, how he's come into the thing, brilliant. Haaland. So, yes, I think I would be more than happy for him to come in. Don't see it happening, but if it could, it's stuff that dreams are made of, basically.
Oh, well, that's a great way to end Pep Guardiola's tenure at Barcelona and possibly his options going forward. So now it's time for the quiz, and the quiz is the Who Am I quiz. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Young Michael. Okay, clue number one. I played for both Barca and Man United.
Gerald Piqué.
No. I made 387 appearances for Barca between 2002 and 2014.
Victor Valdez.
Yes. Very good. I'll give you the other clues. I thought this one might stump you. I moved the second question to the... I was going to have that second, but I moved it around. But I was going to try and stump you with this one. I played for two international teams in my career.
I didn't know that.
So he played for Spain and he played for Catalonia. You know, they try and say they're a different country. So I was going to try and do you an old trick question there. I have World Cup and Euro winners medals without making an appearance. And I finished my career at Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
Right. Second one. This, hopefully, you will find this one harder. Right. Number one. I signed for Barcelona from a Premier League club in 2000. I was one part of a successful central midfield duo in the 1998 title-winning Premier League side. I scored in the 98 World Cup final, and my team went on to win the trophy.
Petit.
Very good. It's very good. So the full clue would have been, I retired from international football in 2003, and after one season at Barcelona, I signed for Chelsea for $7.5 million and ended my career there. Well done. Just two out of two. I'm hoping I'm going to get you with this one.
Go on.
Right. Clue number one. I started my career with Ajax in 1994.
Michael Reisiger.
No. I played in Italy, Spain, Holland, England and France during my career.
Ooh. Winston Bogard?
No. I joined Barca in 1998, making 182 appearances, scoring 90 goals.
Ronald de Boer?
No.
Oh.
Ronald de Boer was a defender. He scored 90 goals.
Sorry. Well, I don't know.
I know. Right.
Okay.
You ready? You ready for the
next clue? I know it is. I fucked it. Yeah, I know it is. I got it. Go on.
Well, you can say it on your full clue. I had a brief spell at Newcastle United.
Patrick Kluivert.
Yes. Well, and then the fifth clue. You're like the fifth clue. My son now plies his trade in the Premier League.
Yeah, fuck's sake. I should have got that in three. The goals threw me. I was thinking of players that play for Ajax and I wasn't really listening to the midfield, the goals part. And then that's what threw me. If I listened to the thing and got it, I would have got it in three. Good one. Well done, mate. That's good. Good they were. Lovely. Well, let's see us out.
Well, that's it, guys, for this week's podcast. I hope you all enjoyed it. To usual T's and C's apply. If you want to get us on the Twitter, it is the Phoenix Five Show podcast. We're blue ticked now as well, so we're a bit of a big deal. Paul, I never know the email address, so I'll let you do the email address.
ThePhoenix5Show@gmail.com.
If you want us any subjects that you want us to talk about, get us on there. And yeah, we'll see you next week. Take care.
Take care, guys.
Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.